accession number 19660, reel 2.
Habe reel 2. You were just telling me about the little concrete.
Yeah, we've done these concrete mixers, and all we're doing day in, day out is building defences all the way along the Belgian-French frontier. The whole battalion were doing it, actually, all the way down. We're assisting the RAs to build all these defences as quick as we can. And I always did have a time, and I'll tell that in another story, if you got enough tape. And from there we moved to another little town, which is the divisional headquarters. And of course we were in billets, we were in houses there, which the accommodation was a lot better. And we just normally just did our own training, kept ourselves going on training, exercises, like on the battle areas, gas drill and all this paraphernalia. And then all of a sudden there's quite all the gas containers had to be exchanged, because apparently Hitler had a gas that penetrated our gas masks, you see. And I think the service people got it all first, got them all changed, and then they did the civilians. Because when I got home on leave, they were doing the civilians. Well, the leave, there were so many out of pure platoon, and I think about six out of one platoon to pick out. So we decided to pick out of a hat. You see, and I was one of the lucky ones. I got the leave and I picked out a hat. This is when we were at Rummage's, when I got my first leave. Sorry, I keep forgetting that, you know. Anyhow, we weren't allowed to take anything home with us, only our gas mask and our changing kit. But I did take a few cigarettes and two or three bottles of champagne I had in me, and left me some of my things behind with a mate of mine. He looked after them till I came back. But the trouble is, if you did take too much, anything like that, cigarettes, wasn't contraband, because you can buy it, there were only chuppence a packet of Woodbines then. I took loads of Woodbines home, and about three bottles of champagne. And if you over-exceeded, you were sent straight back to the unit.
How did you get on with the French civilians at Rummage's?
Well, once I got to know them, I used to be an old dear. When they did send us home, you know, I did get me leave. We got a battle dress each. They changed, all our old clothes were discarded. They were burned, actually, because they were lousy. And so we came back home in battle dress. I got a photo somewhere in my battle dress. I got several photos, but anyhow. And the old dear, all their family were soldiers, and the daughters, she had about four in family, and she altered my battle dress, which made it look, because it was any size. They didn't worry about the sizes then, they just give you and it's all gas penetrators into the stuff. It's very itchy when we got it, but if you washed them, kept washing them, you know, you rinse them actually in cold water anyway, and then got them all pressed out, it fit a little better, you see. They weren't worried about the size, they just give you anyone this. But anyhow, well, I made a good job of it, and she cut the trousers for me, the bottoms, because they're much too big for me, and made them so they fit. And then they give us the little gaiters, you see, instead of the putties. All them went, and that was the last I saw service dress. old service dress, the First World War service dress, actually. And we embarked in trucks, and they took us to, I think it took us to, down to Dewey, in trucks, to, in train, for Cali. I think it's Cali, because it was the, yes, it was Cali. And we didn't get there till the next morning. We took off at night and got there the next morning, early in the hours of the morning, Cali, and embarked for the crossing to Dover. But when we were going up the gangway that was leaving the French, you know, French side of it, there was two MPs on each side of the gangway, and as we walked up, he was counting 10 at a time. He said, "You're trying to catch us, see what you've taken home with you, see that you've got all your kit, and if you hadn't got all your kit, back you went." But there was a sergeant major in front of me, and I think he'd had a drink, and he was having a lot of old, you know, and he just stopped him, and I went, walked on straight on the ship. It was only about a Norse crossing, known happened actually. But the ship had a list all the way. And I always remember, as we were going, Jerry was overhead, dropping mines in front of the ship. And there were some artillery lads on the ship end, on the deck end, trying to blow them up. They were floating, actually, floating mines. And they're trying to blow them up. They had gold, I could go, and at the finish, a Spitfire came along, came over, and boop, 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 he blew them up. And we went to sail right in between them.
So had the German attack occurred by now?
They didn't attack the ship. What they did was dropping mines in front.
No, but the German attack in Belgium, had that occurred?
No. No, it hadn't occurred till I got back. Till we got back.
But the whole battalion had returned to England?
No, the whole battalion didn't leave. There was only so many out of a troop, should I say, or a squadron.
Oh, you were going off on leave?
That's right. So many. It was all different units, all embarked, Cyrenaica, because they were stationed all over northern France, right up to Lens. Lens, Douai, Lille, all round, all the British Army, the 1st Army Corps and the 2nd. I think it was two Army Corps there. So they were 2nd Div and the 1st Div of the... they were all regular troops, most of them, regular secondary service. We hadn't had any of the militia till later on, because there was training militia and all like that, you see. Well, they called the Bevan Boys at the finish, didn't they? There's some good lads amongst them now. So this was just before Christmas, because we were due to go up the Maginot Line when we come back, just before Christmas. Did I carry on?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I had a good leave, and I got back in time, just as usual, you know. So we only had about 8 days at home. You see, and we were on our way back, you see. Traveller didn't count in travelling time. You're talking about a day and a half to get there, day after that, so you get about 7 days at home. And nice to see the family and all like that, and had a reasonable good time, and then I'm on my way back. And when we got back to the billet, that would be just before Christmas, and I think it was on December the 5th, I think it was when we went up, all in on trucks to the Maginot Line. And we bypassed the Maginot Line, because the Maginot Line was way back for this defenceless lake. And we were in front of the Maginot Line. We took over from the French, took over their trenches. Never see a place that stinks so much.
Why and did it stink?
We took over from the French on the Maginot Line. What they did, it was to get you battle-minded, you know, any stress or anything, you know, something like that to get you in. And we used to go out on patrol. But we used to go out every time we went on, a couple of sections went on patrol. And there was two sections that Captain Barclay was in charge of it. He was the C Company, company commander, Captain Barclay. I always remember this. And he went out, used to go on, out on turn of days, and that's just on patrol. And what we used to wear, sandals, sand shoes, and used to tie a sandbag with straw in when you went out on patrol. Blacken your faces and all like that.
What was the idea of the...
The idea to get used to the front line, anything, you know, what came along. Like, you used to go just out on patrol. I think we, our sections were a bit lucky. They went out and we just, what you told, patrolled all the defences at the front part of it, you see. And the officer would tell you, don't touch that. No, this was booby trapped, that was booby trapped. That was what you used to get. And we used to go out for about a couple of hours, then come back again. And but another night, they went out. I wasn't with them that night. They run into a German machine gun posts. Apparently they went too far. I don't know. Well, it all comes out in the wash at the finish. And what happened, they were pinned down by crossfire. And one of the officers, who he charged forward, you know, to the further machine gun post, and they just cut him down. And the others were pinned down all night, actually. So they stopped in there, in the places all night long, you see, until the next night. And Jerry's didn't come down, but, you know, they got so far back. But and they settled down in front of the defences. I suppose they dug themselves in a bit and just waiting for night time to come again, you see. They got so far, but they couldn't get right to the... Because every time they moved, you could see the Germans. They were building fortification. We were building fortification as we were going along. And that's as far as we got. But apparently Captain Barclay, he got wounded in the backside from a grenade. And the other captain, he was in charge of the carrier platoon, and he volunteered to go out with them that night, and he got killed. I think he was the first officer to be killed on the Western Front. I'm trying to remember his name now, because I think there was his father and mother, like Lord and Lady somebody. I don't know him too well for the simple reason he was a carrier platoon officer. A nice fellow, according to the chaps. Anyhow, he got taken prisoner, and they kept him alive for about 3 days. I think he died in Germany in captivity. That was the first loss we had. We had two of them wounded. They got shrapnel wounds, and then Barclay got wounded. Of course, when as soon as they got back, they did get back the next night, and of course he got the officer's medal, and the lance corporal who brought his platoon back with on his own, you see, he got the MC, the MM.
So you were in C Company.
Yeah.
Which platoon were you in?
Well, there'd be, I won't know what platoon they were.
No, which platoon were you in?
What platoon I was in, I was only in the, I think it was second platoon, yeah. Second platoon. We took it in turns going out for, yeah, and he was going out with a couple of French officers who knew the area, see. We weren't going out specifically to capture anybody. We were just getting used to the terrain of the land and all like that. Yeah, that was the idea of it. But I think what happened there when they went out, they got caught in this crossfire machine gun. And so they just laid low. And they moved. They did get so far back, but they couldn't get far enough to get to. So they just laid out all night and they came back the next night. I think two of them were slightly injured, and the Captain Barclay, yeah, strapping his backside. Yeah. But he wasn't, you know, too ill. He was only just shrapnel wounds, I think, which they got out, because he was back to duty in no time. Actually, my commanding officer, Captain Barclay. He belongs to the Barclay, the bank people. He was a pre-war officer. Before the war, he was one of the old chaps out in India, something like that. But other than that, when we I'm trying to think of the name of the town. The whole division was there. We were all converged there, and we got what they called Valency's Woods. Valency Woods, they were. This is when one night, what was happening, after we'd done a lot of training, coming nearer the summertime, you see. And of course, Jerry decided to make his push. And all day long, the German planes coming over and dropping the bombs from different places, you know. So all the old Henkels, actually. And they were sort of a Lysander spotter planes with a Henkel. They were Henkels 123s. I can remember them. And then, of course, you had your dive bombers. But what happened? We embarked in trucks into these woods, and we stopped there practically three nights in these woods. The Germans were looking for us. They knew we were there. They were in these woods somewhere, and we were told not to fire at any German plane at all. This was the next day we left. Of course, the Germans had found out where we were. I think they found out where we are, because somebody got trigger happy one day, because they're massive big, it's like a forest actually. Valency's Woods, they call it. And next day, there was all trucks coming in, lined up during the night, all during the night they did it. And we got in the truck, so many in the truck, about. Would be not a company, wouldn't be about 30 blokes you get in a truck. So it'd be like a platoon. I was 28 actually, so in the platoons. And we went back for Belgium, the whole brigade. We were 4th Brigade, 2nd Division, 2nd Army Corps. So that was our, and it's Cross Keys, Div. I got my old Cross Keys tie here. I got a little one here. It's an officer's one there. And,
so you went into Belgium?
And we went into Belgium. We got plastered, I think, just outside, not far from Brussels. The convoy got busted up completely. I was on a Bren gun, ACAC, and I was just swearing at as the dive bombers were coming down, screeching, you know, the old coming down, screeching, and I'm just coming, because we had tracer in the Bren gun. We had about one tracer in 10, 30 rounds in, actually. 28 to 30. I think you used to put these tracer in there, so when you fired, you could just see where your bullets were going. But they never seemed to get low enough. Though they dived on the trucks, the truck was hit there, the 3-ton trucks they were, the RASC, which were conveyors. And I could see myself, the convoy was gradually getting plastered, this truck was hit, that truck was hit, and then behind, the whole convoy was at halt. So we're there, we just opened to the enemy. And then an officer come, running down, abandoned all vehicles, take your men with you. So I didn't take the tripod. I left the tripod. I just lifted it up the tripod where he said abandon all vehicles. He didn't say take your tripod, he said take your brain gun. The brain gun is take your brain. So I just whipped my brain up and they abandoned it, actually run into some corpse woods. One about 300 yards away, you see, across fields. And I thought to myself, well, they're running that way, I'll go this way. Of course they did. When I looked up, because he was diving down on you, he wasn't firing. He just let 5 bombs out. I always picture that. And mentally, in my mind, the first thing I was looking for was somewhere to dive in. And there was a dirty little ditch, only a little round hole where cattle had been feeding in or something, I don't know, done everything in it. And I just dived in it, because the five bombs are only 25 pounders, about that size, similar to the RAF ones. And I could picture them coming straight down, you know, where they were coming to me, and I just dived in the pond. I never saw my Ben Gun no more. Didn't see my Ben Gun, and I was blown out of the West End, so very close call. And I think I was blown out about 30 or 40 yards away. I wasn't hurt. I was just shaking up. I wasn't hurt at all. Which was a near, well, could put down as a near miss. Then after that, after they left, we had a roll call. Those that are missing and how many was missing and all like that. And I remember the sergeant major had gone sky high over something. And Captain Barclay said, "Now, but he said, pull yourself together, Sergeant Major. He said, go and sit over there." And I think he lost his nerve or something like that. And because he was an old soldier. He already, I think, been in the First World War. Though he's the Sergeant Major. In any case, he just had a roll call. See who was there and see who wasn't, like you're saying. You just called out as in your name was all called out and all like that. And then from that onwards, we humped it. No more wagons. We just shanks ponied it right up to the Albert Canal. And we took up positions on the Albert Canal. And I think we dug in about a foot and a half and just a communication hole in where you can dive in from there, and we're on the high ground and we can look right across the canal. We had a clear field of fire, anything like that. And it was during the night, a load of things were going on, firing all around you didn't know where it was coming from. And then the orders come through that with withdrawing.
Had you been there long?
We've been there about a day and a half. We took up the positions on the Albert Canal.
Had you been fighting with the Germans on the Albert Canal?
I hadn't been fighting them at all. Only the aircraft was annoying us, bombing us. The aircraft. And then on top of that was the... So no sign of a German at all. We fell back. This next day, or about 2 days after, we were there all day digging and in and taking up positions. And then somebody killed a pig, and we put it in a big boiler in this farmhouse. with a big old boiler there, cut it up and made soup of it. A greasy old fat, I always remember that. That's extreme, all the fat off, about 3 inches of fat on it. It only boiled it and made in soup and put vegetables in out of the fields and all like that, made a meal, a hot meal. And we just took it in turns to go down to the hut. It was only a hut there. Well, the only rations we had was 4 squares of chocolate, and we weren't allowed to eat that. We could do a tea. We had some tea little things, I think. Do a little powdered tea in your tin, in your mess tins. But other than that, so we didn't have a lot of food. And then we went back again, and the next day we're falling back all the time. And according to the officer, it's all right. The French are rolling themselves, and the Belgians are there. The Dutch are doing well, and all I could see when we were going through was Frenchmen, Dutchmen, and Belgians going all the opposite way to us. We were going forward; they were going backward. That was when we were marching, along. But it was a bad sight, really, because you saw the civilians on the roadside. Every village we went through, they plastered them. They had no thought for the civilians at all. They just bombed them, and that was it. And we just went through. And if we had anything, we just covered them over, and that's it. Put them by the roadside. It was a shame, really. You know, it's the sort of thing you got hardened to. It didn't sort of. You were sort of numb in yourself when you saw it, like. What was happening. And I think it would be about 5 days after we gradually pull him back, and then it was so make your way back to we're going to try and get back to Dunkirk. We got surrounded a couple of times, but we broke out. But then I was in headquarters. I was in headquarter company then. I got transferred, I think, at the so many la loss and so many. They filled them in, you see. And I was company headquarters then.
And you mean headquarters company?
Yeah. They were further back from the main area where the mostly infantry, because we're all infantry in any case. You as soon as you got somewhere, you dig yourself in, whatever it was, wherever you was, you try and dig yourself in. With your oldest little. They weren't a small space like they are now, a little pickaxe and all like that. We had a pickaxe and the old shovels, that's what we carried. That was part of our equipment for digging in. We had all the old equipment. We had the First World War rifles. And most of the old equipment we had was that. The only thing new was the pouches. Bren got the pouches were different. But what we had was the pouches with 50 rounds. You carried 50 rounds that side and 50 rounds in tens in your pouches. You had little pouches. That was the First World War stuff. And you had the old First World War bayonets. They didn't have the little ones. They didn't issue them till later on.